You are Locked On Ravens, your daily Baltimore Ravens podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to another episode of Locked On Ravens. I am your host, Kevin Ostreicher of Ravens Wire, and we are back, a Thanksgiving Day episode. A very happy Thanksgiving to everybody, and hopefully it is a day filled with turkey, family, if it's safe, of course, and football, but it will not be Ravens football. The big news of yesterday, the Ravens and Steelers game that was scheduled to be played today at 8:20 p.m. Eastern Time is now rescheduled for Sunday at 1:15 p.m. Eastern Time on NBC. And this definitely is because of the recent COVID outbreak that the Ravens have had in their facility. Multiple players, multiple staffers, multiple personnel all have it, and they don't know if the spread is over yet. So I think this was ultimately the best decision for the NFL. In this first segment, I do want to get into why this decision was made and also just why the Pittsburgh Steelers have been so upset about it, why this actually impacts the Ravens in more negative ways than positive ways, and a bunch of things directed at this game that was rescheduled, because it's a pretty big deal, all things considered. Then in our second and third segments, we'll be talking with Chris Carter of Locked On Steelers to preview this matchup between the two teams, the second game between the Ravens and the Steelers. Of course, the Steelers beating the Ravens 28-24 just a few weeks back. So we're going to jump right into this Thanksgiving edition of Locked On Ravens. But before we do that, of course, be sure to follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere there's a podcast. We are there waiting for you Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern Time. Also be sure to follow us on Twitter at Locked On Ravens and my personal account at KOstreicher34 for Ravens analysis, Ravens news, Ravens updates, and everything relating to the Baltimore Ravens. So with all that being said, let's go. Let's jump right in here and let's start with this whole thing, the Ravens and Steelers game again, postponed to Sunday at 1:15 p.m. Eastern Time. The NFL got it right. That's the bottom line. The NFL got this right. This was something where I don't think a lot of people were very certain if the NFL was actually going to take the necessary steps and honestly pull the trigger on postponing this game, because it was the primetime Thanksgiving matchup. It was the best Thanksgiving matchup out of the three games that were slated to be played. The other two, Lions and Texans, as well as football team, the Washington football team, and Cowboys. So this was a game that I think people expected to have more of a divisional impact. At this point, the Steelers all but win the AFC North, unless a miracle by Baltimore happens, which is possible. But at the same time, I think there is a very slim chance Baltimore wins it. But again, I think this is something where this had to happen. There was no way that by the time today came, they were going to have a clear and good number on who potentially has the virus, who is still on the team right now, who was a close contact, who was still on the team right now, who could potentially be harboring the virus. Are there staffers? Are there more personnel members? These extra 3 days give the Ravens and the NFL opportunities to identify those close contacts, to keep the spread of the virus down. If these two teams were to play, if they were to get together without being able to understand and get a clear read on who might have the virus and who needs to quarantine and who doesn't, it could have affected both Baltimore and the Steelers, and to be completely honest, it still might, even if the game is on Sunday. This was not a thing by the NFL where the Ravens, yeah, they have 9 guys on the COVID list right now, I believe the number is. That's a lot of players, but it doesn't matter. The NFL made the 49ers play with pretty much no receiver room a few weeks ago. This was because they have clear positive cases. The 49ers, I believe there were a few false positives in there, and that kind of blew that out of proportion a tiny bit, although still very serious. But the Ravens have 9 positives just among the players. They are in double digits in positives right now. They will definitely need to put more people on the COVID list for close contacts. I think that's what they're trying to figure out right now. Baltimore placed 3 new members of the team on the COVID list yesterday, with Calais Campbell and Matt Skura and Patrick McCarty. So the Ravens are down their best defensive lineman, assuming he was healthy enough to play against Pittsburgh. There was no guarantee that he was. But even with the game moving to Sunday, Calais Campbell still gets that time to heal up and will not play in the game. So that is a certainty. Also, same with Matt Skura and Patrick McCarty, the Ravens' 2 centers on the roster, so they will not suit up either. But the issue with this is that anybody placed on the COVID list, I believe, from yesterday on, is not going to be allowed to play in the Dallas Cowboy game. And that is a game coming up next Thursday for Baltimore. The Ravens had the back-to-back weeks of Thursday Night Football with what was supposed to be Pittsburgh and then Dallas. So some of these guys who go on the COVID list, if they test positive, they are not going to be able to play on Thursday. Now, it's either, I think, 10 days if you're asymptomatic, or it can be 5 if you register 2 negative tests in a span of, I think, 24 hours. I'm not certain on that, but I think those are the rules for COVID lists with positive tests. So some of those guys could potentially come back, but others will definitely be ruled out and not able to play. So this does not benefit Baltimore in a lot of ways. The difficult part of this also, as I talked about a tiny bit yesterday, is that the Ravens are going to have trouble bringing guys in from outside of the organization to fill holes on this roster. The Ravens have Pierre Desir in waiting, a cornerback formerly of the Colts and the Jets. They have Devonta Harris, I believe, still in waiting as well. He is from the Denver Broncos previously. But these guys we saw with Luke Wilson, we saw with Dez Bryant, and all the other signings Baltimore has pulled off this season, they have to have a brief period of quarantine, which is necessary, and just to make sure that they don't have the virus traveling from whatever, wherever they were coming from to Baltimore. That's a 5-6 day period. So now Baltimore is kind of in that area of, well, we're going to have to rely on our practice squad. The Ravens right now, at this very moment, have 44 roster spaces taken. That is 9 spots on their roster that need to be filled, and those are all presumably going to practice squad guys. So the Ravens calling up literally over half of their practice squad for this game, unless there are guys who are able to come off, for example, like Brandon Williams, who can come off the list if he registers a few more days of negative tests because he was a close contact. That's a 5-day quarantine period. And of course, he's healthy enough to play in the game. He is also injured. So that's something where it's important to monitor, because Brandon Williams could be a big, big factor in this game. But for the Ravens, this is really important for them. They have to get this under control. There was a report that the Ravens punished a strength and conditioning coach. That's a fireable thing for me. Apparently the coach was not wearing masks. He was being very lax about it, not wearing his tracker. That's not acceptable. There are rumors out there that it's Steve Saunders. That's not confirmed. Steve Saunders is the head strength and conditioning coordinator, coach for the Ravens. And again, I don't care who it is. Being lax like that around the facility, causing this widespread panic, the Ravens are certainly, I would be very shocked if they are not punished by the league for this. And then at the end of the day, I think Baltimore has to look themselves in the mirror and say, do we want someone like that in the organization? Apparently he's still in the organization right now, but I personally would not go that route with him. So we'll see here. An outbreak to this extent is really what no team has had to go through yet, except for possibly the 49ers. A few other teams have had it as well, but I think this is the biggest case really since we've seen with the Tennessee Titans. And again, every case that any team has is a big one, because this has the potential to spiral out of control like we've seen in Baltimore. But at the end of the day, the NFL made the absolute right decision to postpone this game until Sunday. Steelers players are making a very big deal out of it on Twitter, and it doesn't make them look great, to be honest. Yes, they've been in some unfortunate situations because of this. They haven't broken protocol, it seems like, and there have been a couple teams who they've been scheduled to play, like the Titans and the Ravens, who seemingly have done that. And, you know, whether it be players, coaches, both organizations seemingly have broken the protocols in ways that have gotten both their teams infected in pretty serious ways. And the Steelers, you know, no, they shouldn't have to be quote-unquote punished for that, but look, it's a pandemic. There are things that are going to happen that wouldn't usually affect anybody during a normal NFL season. The players signed up for this. The coaches signed up for this. The NFL signed up for this. There are going to be some hiccups along the way, and this is one of them. So I think this is the right decision. The NFL got it right this time. We're going to head into our first break here, but when we get back, we're going to be talking with Chris Carter of Locked On Steelers. So stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back. And we are back with our second segment of this Locked On Ravens Thanksgiving Day edition episode. Kevin Ostreicher still with you here again. Happy Thanksgiving here from Locked On Ravens. And due to the crossover Thursday tradition here on Locked On Ravens, we're going to keep that rolling. And we're going to be talking with Chris Carter of Locked On Steelers. Now, we recorded this on Tuesday because we didn't want to get in the way of Thanksgiving and everything that goes on with preparing for that with family and everything. So there might be some outdated phrases like, will this game be played? We know that this game will not be played. Will Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams play? Well, Brandon Williams might play. He was a close contact and he's coming off the COVID list potentially on Sunday because of that. But Calais Campbell has the coronavirus reportedly, so he will not. So with all that being said, we're going to jump in here with Chris Carter. Chris, I want to start with the game that happened just a few weeks ago between these two teams, a matchup that came down literally to the last play. And it was a good one all around. That was good Ravens-Steelers rivalry football. And this is one coming up now, Chris, that again, I think we'll still have that same feel, albeit with a few less players for Baltimore, but the Steelers beating the Ravens by the score of 28-24. Chris, what were your overall takeaways from that game from a Steelers perspective, and how do you think those are going to impact the Steelers and even the Ravens going into this new matchup?
I think that one thing that's very interesting, and I had a talk with the guys from, I think it's 410 Sports Talk. They're another Ravens podcast. I talked to them this week. I think that the Ravens dominating the ground game the way they did, and really dominating the trenches. I mean, they had the Ravens had 265 yards on the ground. The Steelers had 48. Usually that is a telltale sign for a blowout win, because if one team can run the ball and one team can't, it's usually over. With that, it wasn't. They outgained the Steelers, I think, by 217 yards on the ground, outgained them by roughly 20 or 19 through the air, and still ended up losing this game by a single possession. You know, some people, you know, there's been the discussion, you know, are the Steelers worried that that's going to happen again, and can they overcome that? Kevin, my reaction to that is, I think it's very unusual to see that kind of domination once between teams. And that usually when, especially in the NFL, when teams are professionals and both teams are highly competitive and well-run organizations, you don't get that kind of mismatch a second time, unless a team is just that, deprived of talent, and the Steelers aren't and the Ravens aren't. So I'd be a little more concerned if I'm the Ravens. If you're not able to get the kind of success on the ground that you had in the last game and stuff the ground game of James Conner the way you did last game, that now you've got other avenues for the Steelers to beat you while you're still needing to stop your own issues with turning the football over. And again, this is in the middle of a two-game losing streak that they have, and the Steelers, of course, are on a 10-game win streak. My takeaway was that the Steelers found a way to win like they have all season. Even it's like sometimes you feel like they're pulling a rabbit out of the hat. It certainly felt like that the week after when they barely beat the Dallas Cowboys. But the Steelers are still – they're getting better. Like, they're figuring things out. The last two wins that they've had have been very comfortable against the Jaguars and the Bengals. You know, two teams that people were like, oh, they might sneak you, and this might be the trap game, and they weren't for the Steelers. I'm interested to see, can the Ravens duplicate what they got on the ground and what they stopped on the ground last time? And if they can't, where would be the source of talent or the resource that they could depend upon to control this game?
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. And I think a big point with that is that the whole mood around Baltimore after this one is that, look, you don't, you know, rush for that many yards as opposed to how many the Steelers had and lose games. Like, this was really an anomaly where Baltimore found their go-to in this game. They found success with the ground game, and they just could not pull it out, mainly because Lamar Jackson in this one just could not get out of his own way. The Pittsburgh Steelers defense really gave him a bunch of different looks that he was not able to capitalize on. I mean, first possession of the game, Robert Spillane, pick six, that sets a tone. And then again, first possession of the third quarter, Alex Highsmith, an interception on the left side of the field. That really helped set a tone, and the Ravens ultimately kind of move away from that. But at the end of the game, this defense, the Ravens were up, and the defense could not finish the game off. The Steelers got a late touchdown, and the offense was tasked with going back down the football field, and they just could not get that final push to put the Steelers away. Chris, I want to ask you next about the defense, and specifically with an acquisition that the Steelers made prior to the trade deadline, but after they played the Baltimore Ravens, that is Avery Williamson, the guy who goes from the winless Jets to the undefeated Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, this acquisition for me was something where I thought this was a great move for them. Devin Bush goes down with that season-ending injury. He's somebody who could fill in, but they've been relying, at least to me, it seems like, on Robert Spillane still to fill that void. What has Avery Williamson's role been on this Pittsburgh Steelers team, and do you expect it to stay that way going forward?
Avery Williamson right now is still just the guy that's learning the defense, and they're happy to let him do that so long as Robert Spillane isn't exploited. The pick six he had against Lamar Jackson, it was spectacular, but it was more so on the mistake of Lamar Jackson. And the Steelers know that. They know that he's not some superstar linebacker that's going to prey on quarterbacks every week for picks. But they do know that Robert Spillane is constantly in the right position. And that's the thing that's really made him valuable, is that you know, he's not lining up in the run spots. And not only is he not lining up in the wrong spots, he's communicating very well. You know, Vince Williams has made it clear. And Williams, it's funny, you know, people don't talk about him much in this defense, but he's the second most tenured player on defense on this team, other than Cam Hayward, because he was drafted in 2013, and he's been playing on and off since then, and he's been a starter since like 2017, since, you know, Ryan Shazier, since Lawrence Timmons left. I look at this team and I see Robert Spillane not giving up big plays. He's, you know, even when like you might beat him for a yard against the run, or you might slip a pass by him, he usually either brings the guy down or they're compensating it for it by using Mike Hilton, who's back and healthy and playing well, Cam Sutton, who's been playing very well, or Terrell Edmonds, who just got two interceptions last week, as they're all moving all these pieces to say, you know what, we're backing up Rob, so you can't really exploit him for big plays. And we're trusting Minkah Fitzpatrick and TJ Watt and Bud Dupree and Joe Hayden and Steven Nelson to not give up big plays when they're doing stuff. So Spillane's doing enough so that they don't have to rush Williamson back. But you can see on tape, when the run comes to Spillane's way, if a lineman gets their hands on him, he's in trouble because he cannot disengage. He's not strong at that point. And Avery Williamson absolutely is. I think the only reason we haven't seen Williamson pop in there yet is because they're trusting Spillane knowing the defense, and they're letting Williamson take his time to learn the defense. And if the day comes where they feel like, hey, it's time to just rotate these guys in there more regularly, they'll do that. But again, they haven't lost a game yet. The defense is giving up the fewest points in the NFL. They're producing the most sacks in the NFL, the most interceptions in the NFL, the most turnovers in the NFL. They're doing everything you want a defense to do right now. So they're like, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it just yet. But they know that they have Williamson in their back pocket if they need to.
A very nice luxury if you're the Pittsburgh Steelers, because you have a player playing at a high level right now. But if there suddenly is a drop-off or if there's an injury, you have a guy in Williamson who you don't have to rush in there right away. He can learn the defense, and you can kind of eliminate some of those mistakes maybe if he was in there his first game as a Pittsburgh Steeler for a high amount of snaps. But finally, Chris, my last question here before we head into our final break is about the game plan that the Pittsburgh Steelers will have both on offense and defense for this Baltimore Ravens team. Do you think it changes at all from the matchup a few weeks ago, or do you think they're going to start to add a few more wrinkles in to really try to beat this Ravens team a second time?
The few things that might change things is if Joe Hayden can't go, they might add some more help to Justin Lane, because he's been the guy that's been starting outside. And really, I mean, no one's really picked on Justin Lane, which is surprising. You know, most people, when you see a third round draft pick cornerback from the Steelers, you're like, go after him now. But with Justin Lane, you know, no one's really taking advantage of him being out there yet. And granted, it's a very small sample size, but if he's out there, I think they might protect him a little bit more. But by and large, no, I think they're coming with the same plan. They know it. I mean, their first game against Lamar Jackson, they forced turnovers three times. Their second game, they forced turnovers four times. It's like, why break? You know, they might add more wrinkles behind what they're doing and say, let's try to confuse him with different looks we haven't shown. And that's something I wrote about for DKPittsburghSports.com before the Jaguars game. And I said, here's what the safeties are doing every play. And Minkah and Terrell, they are lining up one way, showing something else. And then they're like, oh, here's cover two. Psych, it's cover three. Here's cover one. Psych, it's cover four. And it's forcing quarterbacks to hold the ball longer. And that gives the defense time to get after the quarterback more. And they're trusting that. And the thing is with Lamar Jackson, when you do that, you have to do that with the mind that, hey, he can break loose. So they leave an extra guy around the pocket. But they're comfortable doing that. And they might give up another, you know, 100-yard, you know, maybe 180, 200 yards on the ground again to the Ravens collectively. But they believe that as long as Lamar Jackson doesn't beat you with his legs and he can't hit easy passes over the middle, that you're going to be able to force turnovers and stop the Ravens, because, like we've talked about, you know, multiple times with you, Kevin, they need to add more weapons at the receiver position, at the tight, you know, at the running back position. And now, especially with the running back position, with J.K. Dobbins, who was looking like finally that the Ravens were working him in, isn't available, and they're going to rely on Gus Edwards and Justice Hill. So, defensively, contain Lamar Jackson. Offensively, I mean, the Steelers, a lot of people tell the Steelers, like, hey, when are you going to start running the ball more? Because, you know, you're not running the ball a lot. You know, you had three straight games where you rushed for under 50 yards, although this last game they got it back over 100. You know, they're like, well, when are you going to run the ball? Because, you know, you can't win if you can't run the ball. And the Steelers are all kind of saying the same thing. You know, Eric Ebron brought up, he's like, well, one, we've run over 100 yards for six games of our 10 game win streak here. And two, you know, we don't feel like we need to. Ben Roethlisberger is like, we'll throw 70 times if we have to. We're that confident in how efficient our offense is. The Steelers should come out, do what they do, line up with the confident group they have. If Juju's available, that adds to that. Target, you know, hit Eric Ebron, Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool. Just read what the Ravens are saying. Hey, this is what we're trying to take away. This is what our soft spot is. Trust Ben Roethlisberger. He's been a field general this year. He only has 5 interceptions in 10 games. I mean, he has like 24 touchdowns. I mean, that's awesome right there. That's what you want out of. That's the field general that they've been waiting for him to be, not just the gunslinger quarterback that looks for the big plays. So I wouldn't change much for the Steelers. Maybe there's some extra plays you see in there added because they're confident about some things that they've been saving for this point. I don't see too many changes coming. I think they're going to say, you know, Ravens, you got to show something new to beat us. So that's where I think that this game's going to be going.
Yeah, it's arguable that Lamar Jackson has struggled the most against the Kansas City Chiefs and the mm-hmm. Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh forces him into mistakes, and that's just how good the Steelers defense is. You know, you have to take your hat off to them, regardless if you're a Ravens fan or whatever. You know, you take the purple glasses off, whatever. This Pittsburgh Steelers team and this defense in particular is very, very good this season, and they always have been a good defense. This isn't new.
We're gonna head into our final break, and when we get back, Chris is gonna be asking me questions about the Ravens, so stay tuned for that, and we'll be right back.
Back here on Crossover Thursday here on the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host from Locked On Steelers, Chris Carter. He's Kevin Ostreicher for Locked On Ravens. He just got done asking me questions. Now it's time to turn the tables. Now, Kevin, I'm going to try and skip as many of the COVID questions as possible because we talked about that in the first segment. And it's obvious that's what's on everybody's mind. But in relation to that, I got to ask, what's the confidence right now about the Ravens run game without Dobbins, without Ingram? You got Edwards, you got Justice Hill, who ironically is the third missing piece that the Steelers have before they can, claim all the pieces in their collection of Oklahoma State, because they have James Washington and Mason Rudolph from that year. And the Ravens took Justice Hill, who was the running back from that collegiate team. But what's the sense of the run game? You know, of course, Lamar Jackson is a huge part of creating it, but this has got to be very worrisome that the guy who was, you know, part of your big backfield last year, Mark Ingram's out, and the guy who was starting to become a feature back over the past couple of weeks, J.K. Dobbins, is out.
Yeah, absolutely, Chris. And I think more than anything, this is just disappointing from the perspective that J.K. Dobbins was looking like he was the guy, and the Ravens were finally getting the memo that this guy's pretty good, and we could use him in a lot of different ways, both as a runner and as a receiver. But now with Ingram and with Dobbins out, you mentioned it, Gus Edwards and Justice Hill, and maybe even Tyson Williams, the BYU rookie running back from the practice squad who might get called up. This is their time to shine. Now, I think the confidence within the Baltimore Ravens organization with those three, I think it's pretty high. Gus Edwards proved he was the guy who could come in and give the Ravens solid numbers from a yards per carry perspective. Even within his rookie year, he and Lamar Jackson, both rookies the same year. The difference is Lamar Jackson was a first-round pick and Edwards went undrafted. So Edwards came in. The Ravens kind of had a carousel at running back that year in 2018. He came in, averaged over 5 yards a carry over the second half of the season, became their full-time starter, and then they signed Mark Ingram, who then is Mark Ingram at the time, has a great 2019 season. So Edwards is relegated to that second duty as a running back. But in my opinion, Chris, this should be the Dobbins and Edwards show next year going forward. And I think this is a perfect opportunity for Edwards to prove his worth, even though he's done it time and time again. He can prove it again to this Baltimore Ravens team. He's averaged over 5 yards a carry throughout his entire career. He's somebody who also has improved in his lateral movements, being able to jump cut very well. And then Justice Hill is someone who you look at and you kind of think, all right, that's a speed back. But he has deceptive power. He moves his legs. He is also one of the most agile players I've ever seen in the NFL. He has that quick burst. He's not necessarily a 4.2 speed guy, but he has that deceptive speed that can really hurt you on maybe even trick plays. You hand it to him on a sweep one play. The Ravens utilize these guys in a lot of different ways, and they are actually the highest team. They use the most motion out of any team in the entire NFL. So I think we might see two running back sets where we see Justice Hill motioned out into the flat or some other great things like that. But not having Dobbins, it definitely hurts. Ingram, on the other hand, has not performed very well this season. I think it might have to do with, you know, he's over 30 and also the calf injury he sustained in week 16 last year. Those things tend to linger, and I don't think he might have never even fully recovered from that on the season. He's averaging 4.1 yards per carry, which is a decent number, but I think, you know, you look at J.K. Dobbins, who's averaging 5.3, Edwards averaging 4.4. Baltimore has been one of the worst first down teams on offense in the entire NFL this season. And a big part of that is because it seems like every play Mark Ingram is in there on first down, it's 2 yards, it's 3 yards. So we'll see what happens, but I think Edwards and Hill and even Tyson Williams can carry this load for Baltimore if they need to.
I hear you on that. I hear you on that. Now, I want to ask a question about the other side of the running game, which is the Ravens' run defense. After playing the Steelers, where they only allowed 48 yards, they gave up 112 yards on the ground to the Colts. And then for two straight games, they gave up 173 yards to the Patriots and the Titans. Now, granted, the Titans, they got Derrick Henry. That dude's tough. But still, looking at this, and I know Calais Campbell's been dealing with injuries. Brandon Williams is now going to be out of this game. What's the concern like for the run game for the Ravens or the run defense game for the Ravens? Because right now this looks like this is a part of why they're reeling. You know, you can't say that it was part of why they lost three of the last four games, because one of those was the Steelers where they shut down the run game. But this has to concern people in Baltimore, right? Like, they're looking at this and saying, hey, this has to stop very soon.
Yeah, I definitely hear you there, Chris. And that is the sentiment, I think, right now among a lot of people. And I think the big reason for that is I talked to you about this a few weeks ago with the Ravens run defense. They were a top performing unit. And a big part of that had to do with Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams. You lose both of those guys, and especially going up against a team like the Patriots, who have some of the best blocking offensive linemen in the run game in the NFL. You go up against Derrick Henry, who, to their credit, the guys who were playing defense on the defensive line for the Baltimore Ravens in that game did a great job stopping Derrick Henry for about three quarters. The fourth quarter comes, overtime comes, and that is a hard man to stop, especially with how physical he is at the line. But it definitely is concerning that Baltimore has given up these large rushing numbers. Derek Wolf played phenomenally against Tennessee, but he missed practice with an illness. I don't want to specify what illness means in this day and age, but, you know, if that's COVID or if that's something that where he has to miss this game against Pittsburgh and Calais Campbell can't go and Brandon Williams is already out, that's really tough, because if that is the case, they have Aaron Crawford on the practice squad, who they'll most certainly call up if that's the case. Justin Ellis is a huge 350-pound monster who was formerly of the Oakland Raiders, but he has not shown a lot this season. The Ravens tried to snag Damon Harrison, one of the best run stuffers in the NFL, from the Seahawks practice squad. He decided to stay with the Seahawks and go up to their active roster. Ellis is somebody who doesn't command double teams at the line. He gets pushed off the line, and that's not something that you would expect from a 350-pound monster. The other two guys are Justin Madubuike and Roderick Washington, both who are rookies. And they're still getting their feet under them. Again, shortened offseason, no preseason. It's tough for guys to get thrown into the fire. We've seen that a bit with Patrick Queen, who has struggled at times, has looked really great at others. Malik Harrison's a good run-stuffing linebacker. But at the end of the day, Chris, this team is hurting on the defensive line. I mean, it's hurting everywhere at this point. But this is a team that really the staple of their defense was they had this elite secondary, and they could also stop the run. The only issue was maybe a bit of the pass rush. But now they're giving up huge gains on first down, getting into third and short situations where they can't stop guys. And that's a concerning trend.
It has to be a concerning trend. I mean, again, the Ravens, you know, when we talk about the Steelers defense, everyone's like you mentioned, like they're the Steelers defense. But, you know, the Ravens defense, they got the same moniker there, man. Like the Ravens defense has, you know, been even after the Ray Lewis and Ed Reed years, we've seen them, you know, play at a high level. I mean, heck, when the Steelers and Ravens last played, I believe the Ravens were the number one defense in the league. You know, another aspect you got to look at here, of course, is what the Ravens might be trying to do to protect Lamar Jackson, not just in the sense of protection in the pocket, but protect him from, you know, having to do too much in this game, because the Steelers are an opportunistic bunch. You know, we've seen them. I mean, you saw them in the last game where they forced four turnovers on Lamar Jackson, but, you know, they just had a game with four interceptions. And now they lead the NFL with 15 interceptions. And right now they lead the NFL with 21 forced turnovers, and their turnover differential is a plus 12, also leading the NFL. What can the Ravens do to sort of not necessarily take the ball out of Lamar's hands, but help him feel more at ease and not try to put, you know, more weight on his shoulders to force throws and to force plays that will allow that opportunistic defense to come after him.
Yeah, Chris, I think to Lamar Jackson's credit over the last couple of weeks when it seems like the world is crumbling around him, he has been very calm and very poised. He does not let mistakes get to him. He's obviously, of course, very upset when turnovers happen or this, that, and the other. But I think what Baltimore has to do, it's tough because their offense is changing weekly now because of injuries and because of COVID. This offense, as we saw in 2019, was very run heavy. It was an offense that would rely on the run anywhere from 30 to 40 times a game. But now with all the blocking that has been lost on this team, now with the running backs that are down on this team, even before Mark Ingram and J.K. Dobbins tested positive for coronavirus, the offense was changing. We saw a personnel switch over the last few weeks where the Ravens were starting to go away from their heavy sets in a way and start to give three receiver sets more of a look. They would also use more heavy sets than they were using in 2019 at times, bringing in Matt Skura, who was benched last week as an extra offensive lineman off the right side. So it seems like the Ravens are trying to get Lamar Jackson and the Ravens offense up to speed with new personnel and also a somewhat new playbook. But the issue is that this Ravens offense, one, seems very simplistic at times and something defenses can catch up to. Greg Roman has not had his best year as a play caller. And two, the Ravens wide receiver group right now is just an absolute mess. Willie Snead is the team's number one receiver at this point. Dez Bryant is arguably their number two, who literally just came off the practice squad to have a big impact. And that big impact was four catches for 28 yards. Marquise Brown has been nowhere near what people expected from him in year two. He's been dropping passes. He's been demanding the ball and then dropping more passes. So it's just been a roller coaster for Lamar Jackson. And with everything that's being considered, going up against the Steelers defense, that is one of the best, if not the best, in the entire NFL right now, I think Lamar Jackson just can't force things. He's going to want to force things. He's going to want to take advantage of certain windows. But in a blink of an instant, if Joe Hayden plays, Joe Hayden can get over there in a second. We saw that at the end of the first half in the game that Pittsburgh and Baltimore played a few weeks ago, mm-hmm. where there was almost a costly turnover in Baltimore territory just before the end of that half, where if Joe Hayden just gets his hand under that football, that's a fifth turnover for Lamar Jackson.
Like I said, anyone who's listened to me, whether it's here or anywhere, I knows I have a ton of respect for what Lamar Jackson is doing, and I think that people need to be patient about it. I mean, heck, I was the only person in the Locked On Twitter DM group to when Kevin was defending Lamar Jackson. People were coming after him. I was like, actually, I agree. Kevin is right. I think you were getting on him too much. And it's funny. I catch heat from Steelers fans about that. Like, why are you kidding? I was like, listen, that's just a game recognized game. And I see the guy, what he's putting together. I just think, like you said, they got no receivers. I mean, like, you know, if Ben Roethlisberger didn't have the receivers he has right now, if you flip these receiving cords, one, the Ravens would be a lot better. Two, I'm not sure if Ben Roethlisberger's like, I might not want to play with this group because then you'd be throwing it to guys that aren't catching the ball, aren't getting open, and this offense would be nowhere. So I give Lamar Jackson that credence in that space. I do think he needs to pull it together a little bit better, but I think the bigger problem with the Ravens offense is the talent around him. That's why I asked that question. So, Kevin, let's have some fun. I think, Kevin, we got to give our listeners our predictions for how this game goes. What's your final score? Who's like your key factors of the game, and how do you think this plays out?
Yeah, Chris, this is such a tough game for me to pick because, you know, all of me wants to say the Ravens are going to be able to go through this adversity and be able to beat Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And I'm confident they can, but this really all depends on a couple of factors. And I think one of them, you know, I want to avoid the COVID as much as I can here, but who does go on this COVID list? Is it Lamar Jackson? Is it another key player, a couple star players? Are there more positive tests that render other key players inactive for the Ravens? And with them still searching for their identity, with the struggles that they've had, both protecting Lamar Jackson from, you know, a hit perspective and also just not giving him receivers. I mean, it's a little worrisome to sometimes put Lamar Jackson out there with this offensive line. We saw what happened to Joe Burrow in Cincinnati just last week. You know, Cincinnati fails to protect him and he tears his ACL, MCL, a horrible injury for a really, really promising young quarterback. One of my favorites to watch in the NFL. So with all that being said, with the injuries and with the COVID diagnosis, it's just so tough to see a way Baltimore wins this one. I just can't see a way that Baltimore pulls this out depending on who the other positive tests are for this whole coronavirus thing that's been going on. So if I had to give a final score prediction, I still think this is going to be classic Ravens-Steelers rivalry, classic close game, everything that goes into it. But at the end of the day, Pittsburgh is playing extremely well right now. Baltimore is still searching for their identity, and I don't know if they find it this week. I think that's more of a next week thing against Dallas. So I'll say Pittsburgh ends up winning this one by the final score of 27-24, but that could easily flip if there aren't a couple more star key players for Baltimore that go on this COVID list.
I hear what you're saying there. I think it's absolutely relevant who Baltimore brings to the table. I look at this situation, man, and I'm with you. I see a hard time for the Ravens to pull this out. On top of COVID, on top of needing to find their identity, they're in the middle of a 2-game losing streak. They are on a short week after being battered through an overtime game on the road. And I just think that it's really rough to have to bounce back. I think it's today. Were they at home when they get the Titans, actually? I just realized that.
They were.
Oh, geez. I was trying to give them some credit. But I think it's going to be tough to bounce back from all of that and then turn around, and then you're meeting virtually, your facility shut down, and then you're going on the road to Heinz Field, even with, you know, a limited amount of fans. You know, the Steelers are clicking right now. The Ravens aren't. I got to go with the Steelers, and this is the first time I think I'd ever do this, but I think I'm going to pick the Steelers by multiple possessions here. I actually think that the Ravens will pull out a lot of the stops. I think you might see some creativity on offense that does work, but it's going to be the turnovers that come up for Lamar Jackson again when he has to keep doing it, because I think that Ben Roethlisberger is in for a big day. I think that he's, you know, what I've been seeing from him out the year has been what I was expecting, is just he's figuring it out. He's learning, he's developing relationships with his young receivers. He's moving the ball down the field. He's limited his mistakes drastically from years past. And now I think he's at a point where at home against the Ravens, we've seen him before throw 6 touchdowns against them. I'm not saying he's doing that, but I do think the Steelers put up a lot of points. I got this final score going 38-27. I think the Ravens put up some points in the middle, but then when you see that mid-third quarter come around and the Steelers start to pile it on and there's some mistakes by the Ravens, in that fourth quarter, that's when I think the Steelers' run game might come back into it, or the Steelers just keep throwing the ball, but they're going to keep pushing for it. I think the Ravens are going to need to rely on that passing game at some point and passing game down the field to the sidelines, and that's where it's going to lead to problems, because they don't have the guns for that right now. But, yeah, I mean, so both of us got the Steelers winning. I still think it's going to be a highly competitive game and a highly entertaining game. So do all fans – in the NFL, even if there's magically just some random user out there that's like, I don't know how I got to this podcast and I'm not a fan of the Ravens or the Steelers, but you should watch this game, random person, because this is going to be a lot of fun to watch.
It's always great talking to Chris and getting his insight on the Steelers and giving mine on the Ravens, but that's all that I have for you today. When we get back tomorrow, we're going to do our game preview for this Ravens and Steelers matchup. So a happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and I will see you tomorrow.